We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
Welcome in to today's episode, my friend Gene Taylor from Kansas State University. Gene, great to have you with me.
Mike, how's it going? Good to see you. It's been a while, but happy to be on with you guys. This is awesome. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I appreciate taking the time out. I know you're a busy guy, particularly this fall with, you know, trying to run an athletic program and serving on the CFP and all those other things. So appreciate you giving us a few minutes this morning. Hey, I told you I want to visit a little bit about some things in your career, because I think you've got an interesting career track. And then I want to visit on some more contemporaneous issues around CFP and realignment and those kind of things. So if you don't mind, I know your time at the Naval Academy was not your first job in college athletics, but it was you had a long tenure there, I think maybe 14 or 15 years. And you worked with one of the legends in the business in Jack Lingle, and for sure, right? And I wanted to see, you know, when you start early in your career at a military academy, certainly there are some similarities to how college athletics plays out at other places, but there's some nuanced differences, right? And so I'm curious as to how those 15 years, not only at the Naval Academy, but with Jack in particular, maybe, have informed who you have become as an athletic director.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Obviously Jack has been a big influence on my career. Certainly when I got there, Jack was not there. It was a gentleman by the name of Bo Coppage. He was a retired Navy captain, and that's how it always had been there at the Naval Academy. The retired captains kind of rolled into that position. So Jack was really the true first civilian as an athletic director at the Naval Academy. And, you know, he came in and really wanted to kind of modernize the athletic department, which sounds funny. But, you know, there was a lot of things we weren't doing. We were just kind of doing traditional stuff. And so Jack came in, took me under his wing, and I was very, very fortunate to work for him and learn from him. He's very, very knowledgeable. As you know, he knows a ton of people, and I was very fortunate. But, you know, in terms of how it operated, you know, we were a private 501c3 at the Naval Academy. So we did a lot of stuff like any other athletic department. In terms of how we fundraised, how we generated revenue, all those things were very, very normal You know, we had 30 some sports, so that was, you know, probably the largest sports program I've ever been around in terms of the number of sports we had, which is, you know, one of the pillars of the Naval Academy is, you know, the athletic side of things. So, but the uniqueness is just the athletes themselves and what they have to go through from their military perspective, from their, you know, their classwork. I mean, you know, coaches back then didn't worry. Everybody worries about, you know, the 20-hour rule week. You know, at the Naval Academy, they were hopeful to get 15 or 16 hours with them because the amount of time that they have to do for their military. So that side of it was unique. The rest of it felt very much like a regular athletic department. And when Jack came in, really took us to some new levels. And fortunately for me, like I said, I was able to advance my career. You know, a lot of people have to advance their career by making moves and taking this job here and this job there. And, you know, I went from kind of an entry level person in the business office to assistant ticket manager to ticket manager to assistant AD for tickets and operations to associate AD, and then eventually had the opportunity to go to North Dakota State.
Wow. So it is one of the things interesting to me is you don't hear of a lot of folks historically having come necessarily through the ticket track, right? It's, you know, you hear external relations and most people think of that in marketing and development, right? But but I would assume maybe you comment on that a little bit in terms of what you happened there.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for bringing that up because I talk to, you know, a lot of younger folks now. I guess I'm kind of I guess I become kind of the Jack Lingle in terms of era, you know, working with younger people to help them advance their career. And you're right. I think typically the most normal career path is through the external side of the house, fundraising, marketing, any revenue generating, you know, piece of the pie, so to speak. But I was fortunate because Jack gave me so many areas of responsibility while I was there. You know, I had operations, I had event management because we weren't a large staff, believe it or not, with 13 sports. I was able to get my hands in a lot of things. Eventually I became a sport administrator. So I had multiple sports. So I learned to build budgets and learned to deal with coaches and student athletes and all those things that you typically don't get. I was able to get a lot of that. But when the job at North Dakota State came open, fortunately, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit, they were looking at going from Division II to Division I. And so they wanted somebody with more of a broader background, and they knew they needed some fundraising experience, but they needed somebody to help them through the transition. And so, but yeah, I don't say that I'm unusual because there are people who become ADs coming from kind of the internal side of the house, so to speak. But I also had touches of the external from the ticketing, the marketing, and I didn't do a lot of fundraising, but I tell people there are a lot of ways to get there and to sit in the AD chair. Mine's not the most normal path, but it does. You can do it if you broaden your experience as much as you can.
Well, yeah, I want to expand on that just a second before we switch to North Dakota State, because I think it's a key point for anybody who's younger on this, you know, listening to the podcast. You know, I think that with the growth of athletic departments and staffing today, so many jobs have become highly specialized, and as a result, you know, you lose some of the more generalist, you know, aptitude, right, of learning more about a broad-based broad-based operations. And so, yeah, the ticketing pathway was your initial thing, internal ops, but you referred to it. You began to take on additional responsibilities and become, candidly, more of a generalist, right, and see the different parts of the operation. So my counsel is, when I talk to folks who are, even if they're in development and they've got a strong background in development, it's like, hey, that's great, but you need to make sure that you're taking the time to learn the other parts of the business, even if you're not an active participant, even if you're not a sports administrator, or if you're not involved in event management, you need to learn these areas, because once you do ascend to the chair, you've got to have all of that in your toolbox, right?
Yeah, Mike, then that's I actually talk about that, you know, some of our younger staff, again, is, you know, they be careful what job they take. You know, some of these programs, we're certainly not one at K-State right now, but some of these programs are so large with their number of staffing that they have because of the budgets they have. You may have a marketing person that, you know, gets hired as a marketing person, and all they work with is one or two sports. They maybe never even touch a football or a basketball. So finding a way to insert yourself in those opportunities, like you said, not just being so specialized. So I tell people the experience that, you know, at a smaller Division I program, FCS, and get as much broad-based experience as you can, and then start working your way, you know, towards that AD chair. Because sometimes, you know, I'll look at resumes today in positions that we're maybe hiring, and they'll be very focused on one area, and it's not something that we're looking for. We need somebody with more. And that's what we try to do here, is to allow our staffs to work, you know, at least learn and be a part of, you know, the entire football game day, as much as basketball game day as we possibly can, so they can get that broader experience. But you're right, I think you have to be careful being too specialized.
Yeah. So you moved from there to North Dakota State as athletic director, and you had another long tenure at North Dakota State. And so it sounds like there was already this notion that you were going to be making the move from Division II to Division I when you accepted the job. So maybe talk for a few minutes about the opportunity to be a part of that move. And that's not without a lot of significance, right? And then yeah. And then after that transition to Division I, the success of North Dakota State football in particular has been nothing short of phenomenal. And that's continued even after you've left the chair there. Maybe from being the athletic director during that move and then seeing what's happened, what was the launch point for North Dakota State football to become as successful as it has been?
Yeah, Mike, there's a little bit of a background before that. You know, Jack comes into my office and says, "Hey, Gene, there's a D2 program that's looking for an AD at North Dakota State." And I said, "Well, Jack, where's that?" He said, "It's in Fargo, North Dakota." And I said, "Well, where the heck is Fargo, North Dakota? You know, we're living in the United States Naval, working at the United States Naval Academy, living in Annapolis, Maryland. My window overlooked the Chesapeake Bay, and, you know, we had a boat and all these things. I come home and tell my wife we might be moving to Fargo." She wasn't sure if that was the best move in the whole world, but it was a great move at the end of the day. And you're right, we went in there, they hadn't decided that was really going to be the new AD's role, is to say, should we go to Division I, should we stay Division II, or should we add men's ice hockey at the Division I level? And when I finally got the job, the president there at the time, Joe Chapman, you know, basically set me down and said, "Gene, we're going to Division I, you need to figure it out. And but there's a process." So I immediately called Jack, you know, once, and said, "Jack, help me out. I need to." And so he gave me a lot of good advice of how to kind of build the process, you know, committee and consultants outside. We used Bill Carr as one of our consultants, and Gerald Odell. They were great. And then once we got the decision, there was a lot of angst about it. We were a very solid Division II program. Matter of fact, North Dakota State had won multiple national championships in all sports at the D2 level. And a lot of D2 schools looked up to North Dakota State to say, "Hey, we want to be like them." So, you know, we made the move very cautiously, but we knew it was the right move at the time. Many, many people gave advice about how to be successful in terms of making sure it's funded properly. And that's where the president stepped in and helped us a great deal. Our donors stepped up. I would say when we made the move, it was probably 70-75% of our fans and donors against the move to Division I, and maybe even 80%. And so it was a very controversial move, but we knew that was the right move for the institution. North Dakota State was very much like a Division I program. They just didn't know it. Their marketing program was at a high level. They had a radio and TV network that most people would have been very, very envious of back then. And they were doing a lot of things like a Division I program. I kind of came in and said, "Guys, you're already operating like this. You just need to understand we need to probably generate some more revenue." But the biggest thing really was with football. And when the football coach, and that was that's what I sat down with all the coaches. I said to our coaches, I said, "This is going to be a very difficult transition. Some of you will leave on your own. Some of you will take other jobs because you don't want to go through the transition. Some of you will survive the transition, and some of you may not survive the transition." And the football coach is a good friend of mine. He said, "Gene, I don't want to do this." Got a chance to go to the NFL. So that gave us the opportunity to go out and hire a new coach. And we brought in Craig Bohl, and I felt it very important for us to have somebody with Division I experience. And Craig had a lot of Division I experience. The other candidate was a guy by the name of Gus Bradley, who's currently coaching the NFL. So I tell you, I'm not a very, both of them worked out pretty well, but I told Gus, I said, "If it hadn't been for me, you'd still be maybe coaching at North Dakota State and not in the NFL." But he was a great coach as well. But the key was football. And we knew we had to be successful in football. And as I talked to people that had made the transition, they said, "You have to fund football right away. don't get to 63 scholarships as soon as you can. Get the full staffs in your basketball programs. And that's kind of what we went in with the plan. And that's where Gerald and Bill helped us a great deal in our plan. But when football became successful, and I tell you what happened is there was still a lot of angst. We had scheduled University of Montana one of our first years in the transitional phase. We still were Division II. And Montana was coming off a national championship run, and we went up to Montana and won the game. It was a huge victory for us. And at that point, people just said, you know, maybe we can do this Division I thing. And then, you know, Craig got us through the transition, got us into the national championship. And that really turned the corner from a fundraising perspective, from a donor perspective. We became, you know, successful in both in a lot of our sports, men and women's basketball, men's basketball in particular. Softball made it to the NCAA regionals on a regular basis. So, but we funded it the right way, and that was the key. We funded it. We funded it like that. We didn't ease into it. We were fully funded in all of our sports and all of our scholarships by the year three of the transition. And so when we hit Division I eligibility, we were ready to roll.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the success that both you and then University of North Dakota have had in a small population state and so close together, you know. And the football success in North Dakota State and the fan following and the revenue generated is really a pretty phenomenal story. And so clearly you set the foundation there for something that's been able to be continued. And so, you know, I'm going to hypothesize for a minute. So you were at North Dakota State for, you know, 13 years at that point, I guess, and you successful program, and you took an opportunity to go to Iowa with Gary, our good friend Gary Barta, as a deputy AD. Would I be wrong to assume that you felt like, okay, it's time for another challenge and I want to become an FBS athletic director and this is the necessary jump to get to that next chair, or was there more behind that?
No, you're right on the money, Mike. I was always wanted to become a Power 5 FBS athletic director. That was my goal when I left the Naval Academy. We did have a lot of success at North Dakota State. I had applied for other jobs, you know, around the country that I thought would make sense. And, you know, some I got on, you know, later in my time at North Dakota State, there were jobs that I applied for that when I got into them, particularly some at the FBS level, that weren't better jobs even than North Dakota State for various reasons. But I felt myself really wanting another challenge, like you said. So Gary and I was at an NCAA convention and he mentioned to me, he said, hey, Gene, I'm going to have a natural change to a lot of my senior staff. I'm going to lose a lot of them to retirement over the next couple of years. I've never had a deputy position. Can you help me, you know, create one? I'm going to send you some ideas. And so I didn't realize the hook he was setting in my mouth at the time, but so I helped him write this job description and we emailed back and forth and talked. And, you know, once we got through it, he said, hey, would you be interested? I said, Gary, I'm not, you know, so sure. You know, I don't know if I want to make that move. I don't know if it's the right move going from being in the chair to, you know, the number two. And the more we talked, the more I thought about it, you know, he kind of mentioned, he said, Gene, if you really want to make it to the Power 5 level, you probably need some broader experience at this level. And so at the time, it was a tough move. My daughter was just graduating from North Dakota State or from college, or high school, and going into North Dakota State as a freshman or sophomore, I guess that would have been. My son was coming out as a freshman year, was probably going to be the starting quarterback there at the high school. So the timing was tough. But ultimately, we went there for that reason, to get experience at a Power 5 level, to still have a lot of responsibility, which Gary was great. He gave me a ton of responsibility, you know, sports. But that was the reason. I was not getting opportunities to interview. And Gary said, give me, you know, 2 to 3 years. And we'll, you know, get a chance to get you in front of some opportunities. But I will tell you, Mike, it was the best move I made. I learned so much, not only from Gary, but the difference is, you know, you go from we had a $20 million budget when I left North Dakota State to a $115 million budget at Iowa. Decisions are just very different at that level, and understanding that. So that was a huge opportunity for me, and I can't thank Gary enough for giving me that chance.
Well, and that was the bridge to the K-State job, right? So that's good stuff. You know, so I know that you know, you've now been at Kansas State a few years, and you guys have John had done some facility work before your arrival, and you've now grown that more so. And so talk to us a little bit about what your top priorities are right now in Manhattan.
Yeah, thanks. You know, when I got here, obviously John had done a phenomenal job from the John Curry from a fundraising perspective and the donor base. I think, you know, John and the staff, when I got here, had kind of helped the donors understand the importance of giving back, and particularly from a facilities perspective. So that groundwork, that base was already done. They'd already done some nice, really nice projects here. The other thing he'd done, he'd really built a tremendous staff. So I came in and really didn't have to make a lot of changes. There were very, very experienced staff members here, from senior staff to, you know, department heads that love K-State. They were committed to K-State. So I was very fortunate to walk into a great situation. But one of the things, one of the first things we did was when I met with coaches, which I typically always do, is I meet with everybody in the whole department. One of the themes was, okay, football has a lot, and so does men's basketball, women's basketball. What about the rest of us? We need some help. So we decided to put together a facilities master plan and see in total what were our needs, so we could take that story out to our donors. And, you know, the number was pretty big. And then we honed in on basically four projects, which was a new South End Zone project, a new football indoor, and a volleyball and Olympic training center. We've just completed the South End Zone project, opened it this year. That was a $50 million project. And we're starting to break ground here just in a few days, matter of days, on the indoor football, which is about a $40 million project. And the volleyball and Olympic training center, which is about a $37 million project. Once those are done, Mike, that's probably going to be it in terms of major projects for a while. And it's going to be about building additional revenue sources for all the things we're facing, from name, image, and likeness, which, again, that's not really something we have to pay for, but, you know, just building things so we can continue to grow, stay in the battle, so to speak, with, you know, what's going on around the country right now. We are the smallest budget in the Big 12 in terms of operationally, and we need to find additional revenue sources so we can continue to hire the best and keep them here if we can.
So I want to talk about that in just a second, but one quick question that I hadn't thought about until we were in the middle of this. One of the, what most people would consider to be a difficult task that you've had to handle, and you did it, and you did it well, is when you transition from a legendary, iconic coach to the next phase, right? And how do you do that with honor, but at the same time, make sure that you establish that, hey, we're headed towards the future here, and you hire the right coach to carry on tradition and success. It appears that you've navigated those waters really well. So any comments about how that, you know, learn your lessons from that, or things that you said, hey, at the end of the day, I think we did this the right way, or I might've changed this a little bit, or.
Well, obviously I knew that Coach Snyder, we all know the legend that he's built. I mean, literally it's called the greatest turnaround in college football, and it truly is. I mean, K-State football before he got here, I mean, they even talked about dropping football. That's how serious it was. It was literally one of the worst programs in the country for a number of years. So Coach Snyder not only came in and rebuilt it once, he left and then rebuilt it again. But I also knew, you know, when I came in, he was coming off some a cancer battle and some health issues. And he was very open that he wasn't sure how much longer he was going to coach. So, you know, I came in kind of mentally ready that at some point, whether it was year three or four or five, whatever, Coach Snyder was ultimately going to retire, but I just didn't know when. And, you know, after my first year here, we went to the Cactus Bowl. That's what it was called at the time. I won the bowl game, and he came in and said, "Gene, I'm not sure I want to come back next year." I said, "Coach, you have all the time in the world. Just let me know." And so we go through another year, and the next year was a little rougher. It was wearing on him. And, you know, his health was getting better, but I could just tell he wasn't having any fun. And at the end of that year, we didn't qualify for a bowl, and he came in and said, "Gene, I'm really thinking about it." I said, "Coach, just do me a favor. I need a little tighter window, because if you are going to retire, things move pretty quickly." And so sure enough, he came in. He said, "I want to, you know, visit with you and the president." And we went over, and the president was tremendous. They're good friends. They trust each other. You know, and Bill just said, you know, Dick, what do you think? And President Myers asked him, well, what do you think, coach? And he said, I think it's time. And so from there, I included him very much in the process. I asked him about names. He was very helpful. And then very at the very end, when we had kind of final candidates, I said, coach, who would you really consider a better fit here for K-State? And he pointed at my piece of paper and said, Chris Klieman. And so then he's come around and we see him a lot. He looks great. He's come to all of our games. He's still very involved, doing stuff in his things that are important to him from a fundraising and just charitable standpoint. But it worked out very well. But it, you know, replacing a legend and making sure, like you said, doing it the right way was critical. And Chris is the right guy to make sure that, as I told all the candidates, I said, you're going to drive down Bill Snyder Family Highway. You're going to drive down Bill Snyder Highway to get into Manhattan. You're going to walk into the stadium with a statue out front, and then you're going to look up the press box and it said Bill Snyder Family Stadium. You have to be able to understand what you're walking into. And I think some coaches were comfortable with it, some weren't, and Chris was the one that we were very fortunate to get.
It certainly looks like all the trend lines are good on that decision, so congratulations on that. Look, I can't have you on without asking you about the movement in college athletics from a realignment standpoint. And I know at the end of the day, you're going to want to focus on what the Big 12 is going to look like versus maybe some of the turmoil, if you want to call it that, of this past summer. but I've got to ask you about it, Bill. Gene, because, you know, we're all going to face these kinds of things along the way, right? Where tough things happen and we have to learn how we're going to navigate those as leaders. And so I'm just curious, I know in a general sense, there was surprise about the announcement of the movement of OU in Texas to the SEC. And then you have to say, okay, what next? And K-State is the forefront of all your thoughts, right? So how did you personally navigate that? What became your priorities? And what did you learn about K-State during that particular time before, let's call it the next move with the addition of the new schools that are coming?
Yeah, you're right. I would say surprise is an understatement. Shocked. I think we all, ADs, commissioner, we all went through it, from everything from shock to anger to disappointment to sadness to, oh, crap, we better get to work and figure this out. And you're right. I mean, you read the stories and, okay, who's going where, and this school's going to this conference and this school's going to that conference. And K-State, unfortunately, was kind of left out in those conversations. And so, you know, you've got to make sure you calm the waters within your department. You got coaches somewhat panicking. You got staff, oh my goodness, we're not going to have a conference, and what are we going to do? How are we going to recruit? And so you just calm the waters and say, we're fine. This is a great institution, a great program. We have great things to sell. We're going to be fine. And then you start calling your colleagues and what's going on around the country. And at the end of the day, you know, we just started talking amongst the remaining 8 ADs, saying, guys, we have to stick together. We're a great brand. We lost two really good brands in Oklahoma and Texas. But as the rest of us, we're still a great conference. We're great in football, great in basketball. We got to find a way to stick together. And that theme started to change and head that direction, you know, probably a few weeks. It wasn't right away. And Commissioner Bowlesby has been tremendous. And then ultimately, you know, made the next move. And I've think we got the best athletes in the draft, to be honest with you. And things, all of a sudden, once you make that decision, things really started to calm down. But it was up and down. There was I still think, Mike, there's probably some hurt feelings amongst colleagues that you had good friends in this particular conference of ADs that you know, felt very disappointed that they didn't know and they didn't hear about it sooner, that they had to read about it. We're getting through that now, because we are meeting regularly with both the two schools, and now eventually we're going to start meeting with the other four schools. But it's not something you prepare for. You think you're pretty solid and you know there's going to be movement. We knew that. We thought it was going to be us adding as opposed to us losing, and that's where you kind of set you back on your heels. You go, oh, we've got to get to work. And you know, we're in a good spot right now, and very pleased with the four schools we have. But we're going to have a unique period over the next few years. We're going to have four new schools coming in 23. Oklahoma and Texas are still committed to 25. So we're going to be at a point where we're going to be 14 schools, and then we're going to go back to 12. And, you know, financially, we're still not sure where everything's at. But it was certainly interesting period of probably several weeks there, starting in summer.
Yeah, so I one of the things I find interesting is I know that when you began to think about what's next, obviously that you've got this conference TV rights deal that's staring you in the face in a couple of years that you guys are going to be going through. And I'm assuming that, you know, you're replacing a couple of storied brands in a particular footprint. Now you've added some brands, some universities that are really, you know, on the come and who have increasing profiles, but also you've added literally millions of households, right? So I'm assuming that the conference TV rights package had some significant bearing on the selection process.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously, you know, Bob was really good about trying to keep us informed as much as he could, but trying to protect the privacy of those institutions, which, you know, the rumors and things start flowing out there. But we all, you know, talked about, okay, we're losing two big brands, like you mentioned, in Oklahoma and Texas. How do we put ourselves in a position for the negotiation so we can make the best deal possible? And certainly when you look at the markets, Orlando, Houston, Cincinnati, you've got a BYU fan following that's, you know, not quite Notre Dame-ish, but it's, you know, pretty nationwide. You got good programs that have had a lot of success recently. And so all of those factors. Now, you know, does Houston own the Houston market? Not necessarily, but when you add the Big 12 logo onto those schools, it all of a sudden brings their institutions to a little bit higher level. So I think, but that's clearly one of the conversations. It also was, you know, geographically, how do they fit? What was the interest? I will tell you, Mike, the minute that Oklahoma and Texas announced that they were leaving, I can't tell you, I probably had four or five ADs either text me or call me and say, hey, what's going on? You know, so there was a lot of interest, and I think Bob did a great job managing through it, but clearly TV was very much a part of that conversation.
Yeah. I'm gonna wrap it up with a couple different things, and we won't get real deep into this next topic, but I just, first of all, congratulations on being selected to the CFP committee. As you know, as an athletic director, at least my opinion, the for a long time, the sort of capstone was to be included in the NCAA basketball committee. That's what folks wanted to have a chance to do. And then obviously with the implementation of the CFP committee, that has become another marker in an AD's career. And so now you're on that. And I also know that that's a recipe to take a lot of arrows from folks. And so I'm sure you're finding out how that sausage is made. We are recording prior to the conference championship games. And I will say, who knows how that's all going to play out and when this actually airs in a couple of weeks, what will be the setting for semifinals and so forth. We don't just know yet. But without a doubt, it appears we're going to have some new names in the mix from what has happened over the last few years. And I've got to think, you know, they've played their way into that mix, right? But observing that, I would think that's I think that's an encouragement to the process, right?
Yeah, I've heard a couple of things, Mike. It's a tremendous honor to be on this committee. And, you know, when I got a call from Bob Bowlesby, our commissioner, to serve, I couldn't tell you how excited I was. You're right, it is a huge honor. Then he takes your name to to Bill Hunk. Bill called me, Bill Hancock, and then Bill takes it to all the commissioners. And so, and then I get to serve with Gary. Gary's the chair right now. So that, first of all, it's just a lot of fun. But in that room are some very, very smart people that know football. I sit next to Tyrone Willingham. He's probably forgotten more football than I've ever known. There's former players, Will Shields, who's one of the committee members, is both in the College Football Hall of Fame and the NFL Hall of Fame. You wouldn't know it talking to him. So there's a lot of – the biggest thing that I would tell is people are on that committee because they care a great deal about college football. Some have a lot of knowledge in terms of X's and O's, and some of us has just been around it a long time. But when we sit in the room every weekend, it's not about a particular institution. It's your job is to pick the four best teams from watching film, looking at data points, having conversations in the room. None of them ever get really heated. It's just, you know, a lot of strong opinions, a lot of really smart people about football. And people think, well, you don't like this school, you like that school. That's not the case. You're literally looking at data points and who they played. You're watching film. You have conference input, you know. And at the end of the day, you try to just pick the four best. And it's sometimes it's hard. It gets really close at times. You're sometimes splitting hair, but people don't have biases when they walk in that room. They really don't. They really care about making sure the four best teams. And it's been a tremendous process. I've learned a lot, and I'm lucky to be a part of it.
That's great. Well, hey, I always try to end on one personal note for you, Gene, knowing that you don't have a whole lot of spare time. Okay. So let me say that before I ask the question, you know, what do you do to try to, you've got to find some balance in your life, even in a small way as an athletic director, the ability to step back for a few minutes or a couple hours or a day or a week or whatever. How do you, what's your release point? I mean, what do you find yourself leaning into to sort of step away from the stress for some period of time?
Yeah, you know, and Mike, that's a great point for younger folks. You know, younger folks come in, they bury themselves, they work, you know, all kinds of hours. And maybe today the younger folks are understanding the importance of taking a break and getting some alone time and some personal time. You know, for me, it's a couple of things. One, it's my family. Very fortunate that my daughter actually works here for us at K-State. My wife's been obviously a part of the college athletic world for a long time. My son plays college football. So we always find time vacation-wise, at least one point during the summer, maybe twice, that we always go somewhere together. And fortunately, our kids still like hanging out with their parents. We try to spend as much time as we can, like at the Final Fours as a family, and in you know, college football, the national championship. So yes, it's sort of work, but it's really spending time with my family. And then, you know, friends. We have friends that'll come in during the summer. To me, I try to download as much as I can and take the summer. I don't take the summer off. We're working. But as you know, it's a little lighter in the summer. So I'll try to get at least 10 days in the summer just away from work. But it's just, you know, folks will come into town, we'll play some golf. And then I try to take, like I said, that 10 days is a really nice vacation in terms of nice being relaxing and away from away from work. And but it's really family time and just, you know, enjoying the family and, you know, hanging out, really. And they understand it. They understand the business. And the greatest thing, Mike, is, and you probably have this, is when you get in the business and you have friends that aren't part of the athletic world, if they're really your friends, they're respectful enough to not ask you all the questions that you normally get asked. They just want to hang out, maybe have an adult beverage. And if you talk about it, it's great, but they don't bring it up because they respect you enough to say, you know what, we just want to, and I've got some really good friends that help us through that.
Well, look, man, I would challenge us all that we need to find that group of folks where we can have that conversation, right? I had a group of guys when I lived in Knoxville that, you know, I'd say they didn't care whether Tennessee won or lost. That's not totally true because they wanted it for me, but they weren't tied to the university, right? And so the conversations were different. And I think that's important to have. You just need to pull away every now and then, right? One of your comments, I do think it's an industry where we shouldn't discount the fact that our children can be around college athletics. You know, my kids used to come to a pregame meal in basketball and when they were younger, and they'd stay through the half, and then Beth would take them home to do homework or finish homework and go to bed. Right. So it's, my kids have been to the Final Four, you know, with me, or a away football game or those kind of things. And I think that's important to remember. So you're totally on point there.
I got one quick story before we go. I know we're kind of over time, but Casey and Jared, my son and daughter, are pretty young at North Dakota State. And my wife and I were going out for dinner or something. I don't remember what it was. And we had one of our babysitters was one of the women's basketball players. His name is Lacey. And her boyfriend was a young gentleman by the name of Bobby. Bobby played on the football program. They've since got married. They've got a great family. And I think Jared was, I don't know, first or second grade. And Casey was, you know, fourth or fifth. And Lacey said, hey, do you mind if Bobby comes over? We're studying for a class. And she said, my wife goes, well, we got to get the kids to bed. Once they get to bed, yeah, have Bobby come over. Well, Lacey gets there, Casey and Jared get out of bed, Bobby shows up, and the kids are all excited because Lacey and Bobby are there, and, you know, their favorite kids or whatever, players. And Kathy's like, we got to get these kids to bed. I said, honey, we should probably go because you've got two 4.0 students that are really good athletes and really great kids. But I'm not a bad influence for our kids to sit around and hang around with those two for a while. She looks at me, she goes, yeah, let's go. And we went, and they you know, and that's the experiences our kids get to have in this business. It's pretty special.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, Gene, I appreciate you taking the time this morning to visit with me a little bit, and always good to catch up.
Same here, Mike. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on, and enjoy being on. Enjoy talking to you. It's been a while, and look forward to seeing you soon.
We will see each other very soon. So this has been Gene Taylor, the athletic director at Kansas State University. And we hope that you've enjoyed the podcast today, and that you'll also listen each week when we publish these on wherever you get your podcasts. And also, this is available on YouTube in video format as a reminder. And we'll hope to see you again next time. Have a good day.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.